Welcome to another installment of 91 Weeks of Transformation. This is Pastor Rock Dillaman, lead pastor at ACAC. And before we begin this week, let me wish you a very blessed and transformative new year in 2020. The bulk of our readings this week center on the Old Testament prophetic book of Hosea. At first reading, Hosea seems to raise a lot of perplexing questions. Why would God instruct his prophet to marry a prostitute? What was God thinking? But as we unpack the book, you'll discover God knew exactly what he was doing, and he was doing right. And so before we begin to dig into the book, let me make that our first transformation principle. Sometimes, in his continuing work of transformation in your life, God will do things or allow things that at first glance appear to be contradictory. At first glance, they may appear to be working against your transformation. But God always knows what he's doing. And there are times when you can't put your trust in his process. You've got to put your trust in his heart. Well, now as we dig into the book, rather than rolling commentary, I want to reread a message I preached on the book of Hosea back in 2018, because in that message I touch upon transformation principles. It's often said a picture is worth a thousand words, but without words, a picture can certainly be misleading. And the picture that was Hosea's life as it unfolded before his contemporaries made the prophet appear to be a naive victim, somebody who invited unnecessary pain and embarrassment into his life by his refusal to face reality about his wife. But God added words to the picture, and God's words tell a different story. It wasn't Hosea who was unnecessarily inviting pain and embarrassment into his life by a refusal to face reality. It was Hosea's audience, the population of Israel, that was doing that. Hosea was a discerning and devoted servant of God. He was willing to accept personal pain in an effort to warn his people of God's impending judgment and point them towards God's unbelievable love. So Hosea didn't suffer because he was a fool. Hosea suffered because he was faithful. He willingly accepted personal anguish as part of his divine assignment. And that's the next transformation principle. God wants to teach you to look at trouble differently, not as an inconvenience to be escaped as quickly as possible, but sometimes, certainly not all the time, but sometimes as your personal assignment to be carried out for the benefit of other people. And if that seems odd, remember, we are called to be God's witnesses. And we not only witness by our words, but by the lives we live as others are watching. We are called to be God's priesthood, God's royal priests, and priests represent God to people by their words and sometimes by the way they respond to their life circumstances. There are occasions when your heart anguish will be part of your assignment, and understanding that will make a great difference in how you engage it. In many ways, Hosea's story differs little from stories that unfold every day in our culture. Broken lives, broken vows, broken homes, broken hearts are never in short supply. But in other ways, Hosea's story is so unique it almost stands alone. And I'll explain later why I said almost. Hosea's story is set in ancient Samaria, the capital of the kingdom of Israel. One of God's younger prophets, he hoped to open the eyes of a nation that was in rebellion against God. Israel had gone bad. And the path that led them there reminds us that sin usually starts small and then grows. That's a great reminder as you begin a new year. The enemy is never looking to stall your transformation by some huge, catastrophic event. He's willing to start with some small disobedience or compromise or omission, knowing that once sin starts small, it inevitably grows. The people of Israel didn't awaken one day and decide to reject God. They simply dropped God a few spots in their priority list. Their busy lives left little time for worship. The spirit was willing, but the flesh needed the weekend. Now, if you're observant, you'll see this same dynamic unfolding in our current culture. Competition for the weekends is fierce, especially for families with smaller children. But neglecting God for other things is dangerous for a host of reasons. The first, if you live as if other pursuits are more important than God, they will eventually become more important than God to you, and if you're a parent, to your watching children. And then your transformation gets off the rails. Second, when attention to God decreases, the likelihood of idolatry increases. To neglect worship is to lose sight of God's faithfulness and power. Then when problems arise, because we aren't focused on God, we shift our eyes to inferior sources of help and support. That's idolatry, and that was flourishing in Israel. Because as God fades in importance, things inferior to God become more important. That's an important transformation principle. You've got to keep God your focus. You have to make God your first priority, or lesser things will take his place, and then they'll disappoint you. As confidence in God eroded, Israel placed their hopes in foreign alliances and foreign idols. And eventually, the people worshiped the image of a golden calf. You talk about a stubborn idol. How far removed were they from Egypt? And yet, here they are, still worshiping a golden calf. Now, they convinced themselves it was just an alternative way of worshiping the same God. But it wasn't the same God, and it wasn't the same worship. Rather than worshiping the living God who challenged their sinful agenda of wealth and pleasure, they worshiped an impotent, inanimate object that aligned with their agenda. And worse, they sacrificed their children to those idols, a practice that is still in fashion. Behind the rampant abortion in the United States, there is an idolatry, the idolatry of convenience, the idolatry of personal agenda, the idolatry of selfishness. And since the spiritual condition of people shapes everything else, Israel's political front was an unending saga of murder, coups, and anarchy. Now, as all this was unfolding, God kept patiently appealing to Israel, but to no avail. So they were about to learn that those who refuse God's grace choose God's judgment, because God's judgment is simply his releasing the consequence of our choices. It's not God bringing pain into our life. It's God abandoning us to the pain we have created by our own disobedience. Through the prophet, God told Israel that the ruthless nation of Assyria was going to sweep across them, crushing everything in its path, sending the people into exile. Having refused to walk in God's ways, they were going to stumble over them, and Hosea was going to make that clear. Now, Hosea's message was met with calloused indifference, counter-arguments, It's a reminder we always have excuses for our disobedience. We always tend to excuse our lack of transformation by putting the blame on circumstances, other people, or God. Some suggested God must be the vengeful sort. They put the blame at his doorstep, but Hosea reminded them that God's ultimatums are really proof of his love. God wanted them to see what they were doing to themselves. But instead of listening, they blamed God. They said, "Is God really a God of love? If so, why would he let us get in such a mess? And how could a God of love send ruthless people like the Assyrians upon our land?" Now, at that point, God instructed Hosea to do something that appeared bizarre. He often called his prophets to do unusual things, preaching naked, dressing in sackcloth, wearing a yoke. It was spiritual theater, living drama designed to get the attention of a numb populace and draw them to God's spoken word. In Hosea's case, God instructed him to marry a prostitute. His life was going to become a living illustration of Israel's repeated betrayals and spiritual adultery. It would be a drama played out before their eyes. Now, if that seems drastic, remember, ultimately, it isn't God who orders drastic measures, it's us. If God needs to nudge you back to his plan for your transformation by something that appears drastic, remember, God didn't order that. You did by refusing his loving appeals and his repeated instructions. We sometimes make drastic measures necessary, and then we want to put the blame at God's doorstep. And if God calls for some unusual situation, something that appears bizarre to you, remember this. It's not God's countermeasures to idolatry that are bizarre. It's idolatry that's bizarre. What could be more bizarre than betraying a loving God and substituting him and his love for some lifeless and powerless substitute? It's not clear how Hosea's ordeal began. Some believe God literally told him, "Marry this woman even though she's a hooker." Others feel she wasn't a prostitute when God drew Hosea to her, but God knew she would ultimately choose that path. In that case, Hosea would still be correct to say God led him to marry a prostitute, much as we often look back and recognize God led us to some specific situation or course of action, even though he didn't verbally announce it, even though we didn't recognize it at the time. Now, I'm inclined to think Hosea knew beforehand, because his conduct echoed God's conduct. God knew exactly what he was getting into when he joined himself to the people of Israel. Their unfaithfulness didn't surprise him. As you can well imagine, the years that followed Hosea's wedding were painful. He spent many nights waiting for Gomer to return home, knowing she was with another man. His questions to her were met with hostility and the inevitable denials. Their first child was his, the next two were not. At God's direction, he named those children with names that spoke of terrible spiritual realities about to unfold. Every time he called for those kids in public, it was a reminder to everyone who heard him that the nation was betraying God. Well, eventually his wife Gomer returned to the streets. Truth is, she had never really left them. And I suspect those who resented Hosea's announcements and message probably reveled in celebrating the fact that the man who was always telling everybody else how to live couldn't hold his own house together. The few that loved God likely felt Hosea was better off. But even though Gomer crushed his heart and left his home, She hadn't left his heart. He still loved her. Just as Israel thought they had emancipated themselves from God, Gomer thought she was free. But her chosen road to freedom proved to be a dead end. She passed from man to man, all of them eager to bed her, but none of them willing to support her. And there was nothing new there. Eventually, she ended up on the auction block at the slave market, naked before a jeering crowd. They didn't realize she represented them and the future of Israel. But what happened next symbolized what God would one day do for Israel and what God will still one day do for Israel. Hosea bought her and restored her to his home in an act of amazing mercy and grace. She was going to have to leave her old life behind, but a new life was in front of her. Now, Hosea's kindness made no sense, but he was playing the part of God in this drama. And God's love doesn't act according to logic. It acts according to his nature, and his nature is love. When God allows things in your life intended to get you back on your transformation path, intended to make you aware of the idol you've substituted for him, things meant to make you aware that your current path will not lead you to freedom but to bondage, God will intervene by his love, and his love won't be logical. It will be amazing. You see, earlier when I suggested Hosea's story almost stands alone, I said that because Hosea's story is Jesus' story. In Jesus' story, we play the part of Gomer, the unfaithful wife. Like her and the rebellious nation she symbolized, we tend to lose ourselves by seeking freedom in idols, only to find the idols use us, fail to support us, and eventually discard us. Now, thankfully, there's a Hosea willing to pay the ultimate price to redeem us. A Savior willing to endure the shame of crucifixion that he might rescue us from the degrading effects of idolatry. Hosea was not a victim, and neither was Jesus. Both the prophet and his Messiah willingly agreed to a hard path so that we could walk with God rather than stumble over God. Jesus stands at the intersection where we must decide which direction we're going to pursue, rebellion or devotion. As he stands there, he reminds us that no matter our actions in the past, no matter the times we've betrayed him, his desire is to restore us and liberate us. He wants to lift us up from our stumbling and restore us to our walk with him. So the primary transformation takeaways from our readings in Hosea: God sometimes allows us to experience pain for the benefit of others. We're called to be witnesses and priests. Other times, God calls us and allows us to experience pain for our benefit, to show us we've selected a foolish path, one destined to disappoint us at best or bring devastation at worst. He loves us enough to discipline us. He loves us enough to let us feel the consequences of our foolish choices. But he doesn't abandon us. Instead, in his amazing love, he seeks to restore and redeem us. Your transformation is in the hands of a God whose love is beyond your comprehension. Remember that as you walk with Him through 2020. And remember as well that sin starts small and ultimately grows. And the best way to avoid the auction block and public humiliation and personal loss is to nip it in the bud. Don't let it have its small beginnings. God bless you. Have a great week following Jesus.